the nice thing about a younger company is sometimes you can move and adapt to the changing winds without all of the kind of legacy cost and impact of a bigger organization. And, you know, you can trim your sail quicker. The challenge in a mid-sized company is you've got employees that have been there for a long time. There's kind of a stickiness to them. There's a culture. A lot of what we've had to work on is also giving people the confidence. Like you said, every storm runs out of rain. I love that. We'd been talking more in the context of a kingmaker year. So people hear that and go, oh, well, you know, we've got to do amazingly. But it's more of the context of the king is dead, long live the king. So making sure you're around and survive is more important.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. With thanks to our partner, Connect Now, Elevate brings you the best tools, thinking, and strategies to elevate your results. For more information about how Connect Now can make moving easier for your clients, visit connectnow.com.au. And to get new episodes of Elevate directly to your inbox, sign up at eliteagent.com/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, everyone, it's Sam here. Our guest today comes from a pretty fascinating background in corporate finance, mergers and acquisitions, and he's done more than just navigate the boardrooms. He's launched and nurtured businesses across finance, technology, and the manufacturing sectors. He is a highly experienced professional with a background in major financial institutions where he's managed complex financial transactions. These days, he leads his firm, Pebble Ventures, advising companies on M&A. And also at Reach Australia, he's an experienced entrepreneur in residence and now portfolio manager. So welcome to the show, Tom Ellis.
Thanks, Sam. That's a great intro. Really appreciate being here today and talking to you.
Well, you know, you and I have sort of fleetingly crossed paths at different Reach events and things like that. So I've sort of had my eye on you to ask you all the tough questions about prop tech and prop tech in Australia and all that sort of thing. So, you know, you're ready for your grilling now, finally.
Absolutely. And it's sort of nice being part of the Reach team down here. You know, Pete Travermaid and Eb, they're dynamic team, and it's great. Pete's such a, got that diamondism to be able to be everywhere. So it's good to be able to support those guys and do more of the kind of the nerdy stuff in finance and funding and that sort of thing.
Yeah, amazing. And I want to dive deep into that today, but just to, for the benefit of people that maybe don't know you a bit, as I just mentioned in the intro, you've had a fairly diverse career spanning corporate finance, M&A, private equity. What led you to focus on real estate technology with Reach?
It's a great question. I was a banker, capital B, in my early career, and a lot of that was in cash flow finance, so businesses and going concern type businesses. But I was in and around some really big property transactions. The property finance team used to sit next to me. So I've been in the debt stack of property since my early career and really got an appreciation for what happens when developments go well and also not so well. I started my career at the back end of the GFC. So we had a lot of things falling over. And I guess, you know, naturally then I worked for a range of people in Australia. Property's kind of a contact sport. So there was a number of people I was engaged with as clients, friends, or colleagues that were really like quite connected into property and technology. So it's the intersection of those kind of things where my interest is, has kind of been piqued. And I guess spending time with different investors in the sector, seeing the activity of Second Century Ventures and Reach, it was just a great team and a great opportunity to support that emerging ecosystem here. And I think meeting Dave and Tyler, the managing partners from the fund several years ago, them sort of asking me to come across the desk and give them a hand was awesome.
Yeah, amazing. And it is a pretty lively sector here. Well, not just here, but in the US at the moment. Tell me about how lively it is at the moment.
Yeah, so we at Second Century Ventures and Reach, it's sort of one of the most active prop tech funds in the world. We've got pushing 250 portfolio companies, and that'll go to 300 in the next little while. And we're really, really active in finding things that are unlocking value throughout the whole value chain of property, from kind of build to rent, commercial, all the way through to facilities management, and sort of with a bigger focus on clean and green coming through. I think that there's been a real sort of eye-opening of having to make assets work a bit harder. You know, a declining economy in a global scale means that people are looking for those one percenters. And Sam, you talk a lot about it with AI and enabling agents and practitioners. We're seeing the same across the spectrum from building owners, whether it's, you know, individuals or corporations and that need to kind of have more of a sense of where every dollar's going. So that technology enablement, and Pete Brewer chats about it a bit as well, that kind of unlocking the value of things utilizing technology, I think has been really appropriate given the time. You know, in a great market, you're just sort of clipping the ticket and buying or selling or building. And I think in a harder environment, there's sort of a requirement to be upgrading those kind of things in your toolkit. And for us as investors, it's a great time because you see sort of better founders and harder problems solved rather than cash just being thrown at anything, which you know, we came through in sort of 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, definitely. So tell me about what are your primary responsibilities? So we know Pete's the kind of almost the face of everything REIT, but tell us about what the portfolio manager does.
Yeah, it's a great question. Probably has far less mystique when you know what it is. It's a lot of following up and spending time with our 34 APAC portfolio companies and some of the global team on, you know, how they're going from a strategic standpoint, how their finances tracking, what introductions they need to potential investors, having that sort of advisory conversation on how they're going, which is sort of hard to do with some investors. We really go, hey, we're in this with you. There's a problem. Let's work on it together. Or this is how we can unlock value. It's much more collegiate than sort of here's a check, see you later. Pete's really great at building that brand at a macro level. I'm much more sort of behind the scenes chatting to our founders and you know, catch up with them regularly, sort of troubleshooting them, being their confidant and advisor through the difficult task of building these from fledgling to large organizations.
Yeah. So we're going to be featuring a lot of this year's cohort across Elite Agent for the next 12 months. Tell me a little bit about them, or can you tell everyone a little bit about them? Are there any that particularly excite you?
They're all my favorites, all of you cohort companies. And I think for different reasons. You know, Theodore, that team are just really doing some phenomenal stuff in combining technology, fashion, and scaling it through in the not traditionally what you'd think of in prop tech. The guys from GXE who are building the dashboard and sort of mapping and managing all of your assets, whether you're a family office, a REIT, or an active investor. Andrew from Flick It Over, he's doing some phenomenal stuff in terms of forms and I guess reporting and speeding up things for agents and agencies and also looking at stuff outside of property. That's really cool. Michael from Leasy, he's really looking at that pain point for people that are going to be generational renters and how to understand what their needs are different to just here's a for lease sign, go fill out a form. And, you know, I think square by square. So Hank, who's ex-Atlassian, ex-Qantas Loyalty, he's just such a phenomenal human being solving a really interesting problem around conservation. And I think the Erin Living team looking at sort of build to rent and supporting that overall architecture of commercial buildings. It's a really dynamic mix and I can't sort of pick a favorite out of them because they're all such strong founders. You know, I guess the Milk Chalk guys too, Richie and Michael, they're just phenomenal human beings across the portfolio. A big thing for us as investors is finding that fit and alignment. We're unique in some respects in that not everything is pure venture in. We're looking for that sort of decimal point outcome of going to be a billion or zero. We're also about lifting the ecosystem as a whole. And you'd have seen that over the last few years, cohorts. You know, some of these businesses are really strong problems that are being solved for the industry that may not be billion-dollar ideas, but they're still really important. And I think that's such a nice thing to be part of. Don't get me wrong, capital returns a big part of it, but we also have the mandate of things that are supporting the broader property ecosystem.
That was actually going to be my next question, actually. What's been the most rewarding experience you've had at Reach?
I think a couple of things. When coming into a platform where people are wanting to grow and really have that, like put their boots on the ground and do the work, the attitude of people where our founders have kind of come in a bit unsure of how to take that next step and really helping them unlock serious magnitudes of growth. So 2-3 examples I can think of. The Ubi Park team have just gone like a rocket ship over the last sort of 4 years. And that's been phenomenal to see Mostyn, who is affectionately refers to himself as a parking geek, transform that through a number of really complicated journeys into something that's scaling globally. And keep an eye on that. That's going really well. I think Godfrey from Future Rent, seeing him take sort of a blank sheet of paper and an idea into something that's raised over $50 million of debt and equity in a pretty short period of time. You've met him. He's just such a phenomenal human being. And to see the way he can drive from an idea into a very sizable business, hitting the front page of TechCrunch in the States. And that's all the sort of the headline stuff. But what you don't see is like how hard these teams are working behind the scenes. And I call those two out because they're sort of known and big. But the ones that have sort of hit my heart the most are probably the people that have just put their shoulder into it and doing the work. Think about John Hellaby from MarketBuy, just such a hardworking human who just puts his head down, gets on with it. The team from Tarpey as well, you know, I think people would be surprised at how big their growth rate's been. You have to ask Tal and Taylor on what that actual number is, because I think they keep it under wraps, but they are a phenomenally quick growing machine. And I think the piece that's been interesting is watching founders make some really hard decisions when markets have changed. It's hard to remove headcount. It's hard to change your business. It's hard to change your product or to focus on different areas. And you know, where it's been rewarding is helping enable those conversations. And I joke about it with the team that it's corporate therapy. It's being able to sort of call me and say, this is not going well, or shareholders threaten this, or you know, we want to sort of unlock this next bit of growth, and what do we do? And I think that that's sort of where I play well. And you know, my background in largely distressed private equity and debt means I've sort of I've seen some of the movies before, and it doesn't repeat, but it rhymes. So that's kind of a long, long answer into what I do there, but I hope that gives you a better picture.
Yeah, definitely it does. And I mean, you just made me think actually, because last year was a bit of a tricky year for a lot of people, like both agents and prop tech. What are the sort of things that you kind of talk about when things, you know, like Matt LaHood's expression, you know, every storm runs out of rain, kind of springs directly to mind. But when you're in it as a founder, and I mean, we had a pretty challenging year last year ourselves as well, because everyone else was having a challenging year. How do you work your way through the rough times when, you know, some of these companies are very young?
The nice thing about a younger company is sometimes you can move and adapt to the changing winds without all of the kind of legacy cost and impact of a bigger organization. And, you know, you can trim your sail quicker. The challenge in a mid-sized company is you've got employees that have been there for a long time. There's kind of a stickiness to them. There's a culture. A lot of what we've had to work on is also giving people the confidence. Like you said, every storm runs out of rain. I love that. We've been talking more in the context of a kingmaker year. So people hear that and go, oh, well, you know, we've got to do amazingly. But it's more of the context of the king is dead, long live the king. So making sure you're around and survive is more important, because then to the victor go the spoils, you know, not to mix too many metaphors, but that kind of context of getting through this is more important than shooting the lights out. So having conversations about extending runway, how do you bring forward revenue? One of our portfolio companies, they're in a real jam, and I did a workshop with their team on how to bring forward a whole chunk of a year's revenue to mean that they'd make payroll for the next 6 months, kind of at this, we're either going to shut or what do we do? So we sort of helped them understand the different ways they could get out of it. And the main one was going to their client base and their former clients and saying, hey, we'll do you a great deal, but we need the cash in today. I think the hard thing is also that perspective of things will pass, but removing people out of businesses, shutting products down, not attending certain conferences, they're all hard calls. So a big part of it is a bit of a framework I have that there's not a bad decision. It's about the decision making. No one actively makes a bad choice. So how do we work together to help people make the best decision they can? So what data do they need? Who can we put them in touch with? Who's been through that path before? And that's where we lean on the global reach team, where, you know, we've got companies that have kind of been there, done that, and sort of bought and sold the t-shirt. So to be able to get someone from an Australian emerging business connecting to a large US corporate who's raised a couple hundred million, that can really shift the needle on going, oh, well, it's not that hard. And a great example is, you know, Kylie Dillon. She's a phenomenal entrepreneur. We sat her down next to Min Alexander from Boss Cat in San Diego last year, and she was just able to have this phenomenal conversation and get a real pump up from Min, who's this really great entrepreneur, serial entrepreneur. And to have that kind of network, I think Kylie said to me that that gave her a lot of energy in a time that was pretty hard going.
Yeah, definitely. So what do you think, looking forward, looking out there with your binoculars, what do you think are some of the biggest challenges that new companies will face in the real estate industry today? And also, I guess the other side of that, because sometimes the biggest challenges are also the biggest opportunities. So what do you see for the real estate industry sort of looking forward?
I think it's a really interesting and fairly expansive question in that the real estate industry is so broad. There's plenty of opportunity. You know, in my language, I say there's plenty of wood to chop. A lot of people are kind of looking at, oh, well, you know, the TAM is this big or total addressable market. I think the challenge for a lot of people is they forget that it starts with relationship. To be truly understanding a problem, you've got to have some connection to it. And I think in difficult times where the economy is not as great as it might be, and it's a bit harder to get that dollar, there is a requirement to deliver more value. So to really either put more time back in someone's day, save them some money, or free them up in some capacity, whether it's automated reporting like Wayne from Agent Profit Planner, who I should have mentioned earlier in our cohort company. But thinking about what are those stakeholders that you're working with, something I've picked up from our conversation, Sam, is attention of real estate agents is a bit haywire at the moment with all the noise. So how do you have a real conversation about a relationship and how this will help understanding their need rather than going, hey, I've got this tool and this is what it's going to do. And maybe this, they throw AI in the mix, but it's not really understood in the sense of how to make them a better practitioner. So I think in these environments, there's a requirement for people to slow down and really communicate well on what problem they're trying to solve. And I think sort of with my binoculars on, so to speak, a focus on understanding impact and what that means, whether it's impact to people, impact to teams, impact to bottom line. Everything's looking at that understanding of how to drive a sort of more optimized dollar spend rather than an investment in billboards and marketing, so to speak, or letterbox drops if we're talking about sort of resi agents, thinking a bit more around, well, where are those big value creation things going to happen so that people can have repeatable behavior and scale and see the benefit. I think the hard thing with some technology and any solution really is the sort of what's in it for me. If I'm the buyer, what is my benefit? So those that will be really successful are people that understand what's in it for their customer.
Yeah. So that sort of starts with the consumer. There's probably two consumers we can talk about here. That's your residential real estate consumer, which is like me, or your commercial real estate consumer, which is a much bigger, less emotional creature. What do you think that the real estate customer of the future, let's start with residential, is looking for from their agent in the future?
I think they're looking for a bit more of a trusted advisor. You know, I've come through a banking royal commission and a few other really interesting bits of corporate finance. And we saw that go from a really relationship-led to a really product-led sort of market. And now it's coming back to relationship-focused. And I think that we've seen, you know, I'm in Victoria, I've seen a lot of agents that were just like billboard up, face of themselves, all about their ego and not necessarily understanding the needs of their customers. And I think that's been reflected in those that aren't getting the numbers that they were purely at an agency level. I think the other challenge is where people are hanging their shingle and where they're relating their brand. You know, I live in an era where there's more real estates and just about real estate agencies than just about anything. And it's still about results. So how are you driving marketing and communicating that you're there to support your customer, being a homeowner or a tenant or a landlord? I think that messaging is becoming more and more important.
Yeah.
And then on the commercial side, I've been talking about this with the Erin Living team because they're sort of selling into that build-to-rent community and those kind of larger scale developments. And a number of my friends are developers or work for big developers. There's a real push towards community. That's the difference in these things, whether it's a development of townhouses or 700 apartments. The thing that's coming to the fore is understanding that there is more than just a key and a lock. It's how do people engage with the built environment? What's the green space they need? How do they get connected utilities? How do they deal with things when they're not going well? How does insurance flow through into things that aren't going so well, like cracks in buildings? And we've seen a lot of, I guess, cost come into the market at a commercial level because of faults and defects and labor. So sort of understanding that getting things right saves you time and money over the medium and long term, I think is getting a much better audience than 8 to 10 years ago when my business partner was a huge developer and it was like multiplex, let's get the slab down, let's build, we've got to do a level a week, you know, that very structured and kind of, I guess, quick approach to much more thoughtful.
Yeah, I feel like you've seen my questions, even though you haven't, but going down that path, I mean, obviously, I've got more than a passing interest in AI, but I've seen some amazing commercial solutions in AI where you can actually simulate a whole building before you've even broken ground, never mind the slab going down. But have you had any experience with that sort of thing?
I do, and it's remiss of me not to have mentioned Arkanite. I didn't have my list of portfolio companies in front of me. Apologies, guys.
I should have warned you about that question, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been a nice heads up. We'll put them in the show notes. It's fine. But the team from Arkanite are sort of doing that from off the plan, VR, through to building you a render. And yeah, I've seen some really interesting businesses that are using the Unreal Engine to give you a visual perspective of what each apartment could look like or what the aspect of moving this house would be. I think the big piece of that is tactility. So how does it feel to a consumer or a buyer to understand what that product looks like? And AI, sort of soft AI, not sort of hardcore large language modules, but understanding what the light could look like at different times of the season, what kind of data you can give someone so they have more confidence in the product. I'm seeing some really interesting business cases for that. It's kind of got elements of AI, but also of just sort of bigger computing power to sort of show you, hey, Sam, this is what your new furniture could look like in this apartment. You don't like it, we could flip it, we can go to a different apartment. Just that whole buying experience is shifting. And I guess the other side of that is the journey to understand how to get to that particular apartment. We're seeing AI start to kind of help troubleshoot that conversation. I know that Chris from List Assist in his home search product has been building in a lot of technology around, I'm looking for these kind of aspects in this broad region. You know, if you look on an Australian MLS, you type in 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom in this radius, it won't give you the 3.5-bedroom. It won't give you the kind of 4-bedroom. You're kind of stuck in these things. It won't go, I know you're looking for this and here's one with a pool. That's sort of light suggestions. And that's where I'm seeing AI, sort of broader commercial impact starting to come in. And then on the commercial kind of construction site selection, here are the parameters we're looking for, getting AI to kind of scan and sort of twist that into different perspectives. It's much closer than it was sort of even 6 months ago, I'd say.
On the residential side too, I think I was talking to somebody, I don't know whether it was one of the cohort last year or the year before, but they were able to tell which agent in a particular market through some sort of AI had the most premium. So it didn't matter how many, well, I think it didn't matter how many property, you know who I'm talking about, don't
you? Yeah. You're talking about Jim from Quant. So Quant is effectively a data sandbox to stack rank agents around actual sell through. So it was positioned when it kicked off around defaults in banks. So who is the best agent to maximize the value of this property? And it would go through data and say, well, you know, in the Gold Coast, here are all the agents and Rachel McGuinness, whatever, says she's great, but Billy, whatever, is actually selling through getting a higher premium per square foot. So that's who you should sell through. And then the data that comes off that around how you make a more informed decision as a consumer around who you partner with to make that sale happen.
Yeah, it would have been interesting. I mean, I sold a property last year. God, it feels like it was 2 years ago now. But I remember thinking about that business and thinking, geez, I wish I had access to that data. That would be very cool.
And this is probably an interesting point around where companies go. You know, we've looked with Jim and that tool saying, hey, you know, for some agencies, that makes sense as a recruitment tool, right? Like if you know who the best agents or highest selling are in a particular region, you can start to target them. Or if you're looking at how you're kind of ladderboarding yourself in a region, you can be like, well, why is this person always in that bracket? And is it real? Because there's often a lot of noise around who's getting the big sales and doesn't necessarily reflect in their balance sheet at the end of the day.
Yeah, or what you see on Facebook, because Facebook rewards engagement rather than the truth.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is where it's very like 08, 09 in my experience. Yeah, there's a lot of finance Lambos getting around and that's sort of usually the sign of things starting to turn a bit.
Yeah, interesting. We live in interesting times for sure.
I would definitely go for some less interesting at the moment. I feel like there's been a fair bit of volatility.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I was going to say, I know that there has been over the last few years a bit of a growing culture of agents investing in prop tech, particularly tools that they use. So if you're listening, if you're an agent sitting here listening to this, what I'd like to ask you is, based on your experience, what advice would you give agents before they invest in prop tech? Like, what would you be thinking?
It's a great question, and it's something we see both agents, agencies, developers, and people in and around that space. They have a really deep connection to a problem, and some of the bigger investors in our portfolio companies have been agencies that go, hey, I really get that, and I'm going to go deep into it. Caveat this with, it's not financial advice and all the usual things, but I think any investment needs to be well thought out around how much you're prepared to sort of lose. So not going, this is going to be a unicorn, but what am I going to learn through this as well? So having an allocation towards what's naturally quite high risk and using this, I'm going to learn from this team. I'm going to understand how it can support my business. And then you look at how that integrates into building a better agency and driving better outcomes. I encourage a lot of people to spend time in and around that space. The other piece is, only part with what you're comfortable parting with. There's a lot of ways to roam, and working with a company and sort of saying, well, we're going to be a specific partner and invest in that. Make sure that you're deriving benefit both ways. You've known me long enough to know that almost everything I say is, it's about a relationship. So I think also for agencies and investors, not to be predatory, to understand that it is two-way and that you're there to support, and it's more than capital. It's about, hey, we're going to invest, but we're also going to take it on into our business. That's probably the biggest thing an agency investor could do, is to use what they invest in. We've got a great business that has a number of agencies and very well successful agents that have invested. And they're just saying, why aren't you using us? You know, you could unlock all this value through your network just by using us. So I think there's sort of a few things there that are really important, thinking strategically around how involved you want to be, how you make it part of your strategy, and investing in the tools and the time as well. And Sam, you talk about AI, I think the same in different guises for different products that are going to support your business.
Yeah. I just want to ask you one M&A question, because it's something that sort of interests me as a reporter, I suppose. I'm going to put my reporter's hat on. I've never seen so much M&A activity within sort of the larger prop techs in this country as I have in the last couple of years. Why do you think that is? And do you see it continuing?
It's a really great question. I think there's a couple of components to it. There's the fact that organic growth has slowed. And if you're a large multinational or listed company and you've got targets to hit, if you can't grow organically, you're looking for where you can get growth and pricing it in appropriately. I think the other component is, we've got phenomenal technologists in Australia, and a lot of the businesses that were sort of born out of the back of the REA domain time are starting to hit maturity. You know, it sort of takes 10 plus years to be an overnight success. So we're seeing that cycle come through, where businesses that have been pretty hard at it for a long time are probably far bigger than some people would think. And that then gets them to a size where they start to be attractive for acquisitions. I expect it to continue. I mean, depending on what some of these findings are around ACCC and other things, there's been a suggestion that, you know, large corporations will need to go through sort of that process. That's yet to be kind of agreed by the government, but there is always appetite for M&A. It's probably been more reported on of late because there's been sort of a few interesting things happening in the market. I think we expect it to pick up over the next few years, as, you know, broader growth is a bit stabilizes and comes out of kind of zero interest rate to going, well, you know, we've got to find a way to get that growth. The numbers may not be where people wanted them to be. You know, a valuation of 2020 is not holding in this market, but great businesses are getting acquired and are looking at partnering. I expect it to continue, and, you know, we need it to recycle cash into the ecosystem. The best thing for more founders getting funded is more cash coming back. At a kind of extreme level, Canva just did a big secondary sale, and that created hundreds of millions of dollars being recycled into the Australian economy. And we hope some of that goes towards prop techs.
Yeah, absolutely. They're the incredible success story of the century, aren't they, though?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think there's a lot of great Australian businesses, and you know, Active Pipes often put up there. We're a good participant in that business, and that's been awesome to see Ash starting to support some people. You know, he's the chairman of Flick It Over, Andrew Caligiuri's business. Andrew's raised some good money this year. So I think that seeing that support is really important. And there's also, I guess, components of bigger problems are being solved, so that becomes attractive to different acquirers.
Yeah. Could I ask one more question on top of that? And that is, have you seen any that you've thought, yes, that was a brilliant idea, those people are a really good fit? And have you seen any that's actually scratching your head going, what on earth?
I have on both. I think the right fit is usually where you kind of go, I couldn't see it. And then after the fact, you go, oh, that makes so much sense together. You know, and I think Raf from Bricks and Agents been really good at doing that. He's sort of acquired a few adjacent businesses that in isolation probably wouldn't have been making all that much sense. But as you see it sort of come together in its platform, it's a really neat product. And obviously, you know, PropTech Group, that's a phenomenal success. You know, they kind of, that team built that out for them to get an exit out of that as well. Sort of a second exit because it was listed. Yeah, that's really exciting to see and to see where that goes. And then I guess on the other side, unfortunately, you see things get acquired usually by large corporates and then get shut down or rebranded and sort of drift off. I probably won't name them just so I don't want to tick anyone off too badly. But I think the hardest ones are when you see what could have been and it gets ingested into a different business and just gets put on the shelf. We've had it a couple of times in businesses I've been involved with where it sort of feels like a letdown when it gets acquired and sort of shut down and the idea gets parked.
Yeah, I completely get that. All right, so you and I, we're seeing each other at ARIC, but we're also going to be seeing each other in Sydney in a couple of months' time at the PropTech Summit where we're both speaking on different things, obviously. Tell me a little bit about what you're sharing and what people will get out of that one.
Yeah, it's great. And it's really nice to kind of, I guess, speak on some different stuff. You know, Pete's great at doing a lot of hearts and minds stuff. So I get to do a few nerdy things on how PropTech can navigate the opportunities in the Australian retail real estate industry. So helping sort of moderate a panel of people more in the commercial space. I'm also doing a bit of a keynote on the build to rent space, which will be really interesting because that means a lot of things to different people. So I'll be really excited to see how people respond to that. And how technology as part of that stack helps people think about what build to rent means and what that can look like. I think it'll be a great event. I know you're talking about a few different things and running a couple of workshops and a masterclass. I think when we have these sort of large events, that the best thing for me is getting the questions from people, getting them to start thinking and engaging with the content. I'm running a roundtable on data analytics and predictive insights and sort of talking about what that means and how people can make different decisions. So I think if people can turn up and have an open mind and ask some questions and say, look, I'm not sure about this, that for me would be a great outcome. What are you sort of hoping to get out of that?
Yeah, I've been to a couple of them before and I sometimes get stuck in the resi space. So what I really love about those events is meeting people from the commercial space and also seeing the innovation, because I think it's probably one of the few events where you actually go and see what people are thinking about before it hits resi. And so I guess that's what I'm looking forward to. But I think, you know, with any event, and I'm sure you're the same, but you might just meet one person that knows one person or tells you something or gives you a piece of advice or a tip or something or other that changes your life.
I think probably the biggest thing I talk to our cohort companies about, and, you know, not to sort of spill all the sauce from what we do internally, but it's kind of have ambition and focus, but change if you need to. Don't go, I'm going to go and get sales out of this. And also from people coming to sort of large events, whether it's ARIC, whether it's a PropTech Summit, whether it's anything, you sort of have some goals and sort of you can pivot those up and down depending on how conversations go. But think about what is one or two small things you can take away and then translate into your business or your investment thesis or a company you work with. So that then you go, oh, that's what I got out of it. I've seen too often, particularly people from larger corporates or large agencies go to a conference and just go, oh yeah, the parties were great, rather than I met someone and we had this really interesting discussion about where the build to rent sector is going or what materials are coming forward in resi construction or changes of legislation. And I think for us as investors, we meet some really interesting companies by being at these things, and people that are building ideas, and they come up to us and say, hey, I'm thinking about doing this thing. And my biggest thing is to encourage people to have a go. With more people having a go, gets better outcomes, gets better problems solved.
So there you go. Come along to the PropTech Summit, have a chat to Tom, and you never know, your next idea might get funded, right?
100%. And seriously, like people we've met over the years, we've seen their journey change, the product change, and we've invested in a number of them. You know, it's very much a people game. And again, I'm going to talk about relationships, but it's seeing how people build relationships with the ecosystem, with each other, working with other people, and how they sort of come about solving the problem. Because we think, how are they going to get through a difficult time? Because it's not all big checks and blue sky. There's a bit of stormy weather to get through in order to kind of get anywhere near an exit.
Yeah, it sounds like 10 years of doing the damn work too.
And I think that's probably a good thing to comment on, and something that you've heard us talk about when we have our kind of masterclasses is we talk about the Reach program, that no one wins Reach. It's about a long-term partnership and getting that together and growing and building these great companies that are enduring. And it's not like it's a race, and if you get funded, you're great, and if you don't, you're not. It's a journey, and there's plenty of different ways to roam. And if it's not a fit for our investment thesis, it doesn't mean your business isn't great. It's just that our parameters or a given year are on certain factors, or that your valuation doesn't fit with where we can part with cash, or a multitude of things. It's never something to be taken on your heart.
Yeah. Well, it's such a fascinating space that you live in. And I want to thank you for joining us on the podcast today. It's a bit different for everyone, but I'm sure that there's a lot of people sort of with wheels turning at the moment. So that's fantastic. Thank you for that. If there was one piece of advice or one thing that you'd like to leave our audience with today, what would it be?
There's probably two. One is to have a go, and whether that's from an investing standpoint, building something, or if you're an agent or agency, have a go at engaging with some technology that's a little bit different. The other side of that is sit back and listen. That's the component that I think a lot of people in our industry jump straight to, I know, or that's the way we've always done things. So listening to ideas, to the people in your business that are seeing things or starting to play with AI or experiencing technology or have their friends do things, to listen to those meetings and find how you could help. I think that's where you're going to get the most benefit, whether it's investing, whether it's for your agency, whether it's for how you run your day as a practitioner. Those two things, I think, will hold you in great stead.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic advice. Tom Ellis, thank you so much.
Thanks, Sam, and see you next week.
Absolutely.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Elevate Podcast, with thanks to Connect Now. To stay in touch with all things Elite Agent, sign up for our daily newsletter, The Brief, at eliteagent.com/subscribe.